It feels like forever since I've been here. I don't know about you, but for me at least, it feels that way, even though it's just 2 weeks ago, 3 Sundays ago that I last spoke. But today I want to, in a sense, continue on some reflections that started out as thinking about the prophets. And it was partly influenced by two sermons I heard from on Elijah and Elisha and their transition in leadership. And but that has led to a number of different reflections. But the last time I spoke, I think it was the last time, was I talked about passing on the baton and how that took place with Elijah and Elisha. And I was sort of in the trajectory of continuing reflections there when the thing that pressed upon me most was to look at the stories of Samson and Jesus and look at them as two different types, two different models of being God's witness. And so that was the beginning of this reflection. And it's gone a number of different ways. And so I'm trying to pare things down this morning. But one that seems kind of perhaps not connected to you, but for me it's deeply connected, is something I may have said here, I'm not really sure, but a reflection I heard recently brought it back to mind, and that is that there are between, zero and one, there is an infinite number of numbers. Between 0 and 0.1, there are an infinite number of numbers. And it continues on that way. Every zero you add, they're still infinite. You still haven't made any distance away. So there are an infinite number of numbers, and there are an infinite number of possibilities. And the reflection that I was listening to relatively recently, the person was using that analogy to say that if there are an infinite number of numbers and possibilities, there are an infinite number of lives out there, and what that means, this person was arguing or saying, is that each of us has a unique path, since there it's not like the number of options is limited. Each path, no matter how many people are born, each person has a path that is uniquely theirs. Now, where do you think the logic of that reflection goes? Any ideas? What might that mean? Choices. It's about choices. What else is it about? An infinite number of possible outcomes. Exactly, giving grace to people that do things differently. But what it means as well is that, there are things, Susan, that if you don't do them, and I don't mean this as a guilt trip, there's nobody else to do them. They are for you to give. And you're giving them not just to your circle, you're giving it to the universe. So Chris, you know, you are the only Chris Miller that will ever exist in a few different directions. But the point this writer was trying to make is that we are each, in a sense, have this trajectory before us that is ours alone. And we need to focus on that, because the things that we have opportunities to do, the things that are placed on our hearts to do, we need to act on them, because there may not be anybody else. Now, as soon as I say that, I think of sort of tunnel vision. And one of the worst examples of tunnel vision is, for instance, well, worse is a little bit dramatic, but one example is, say, last night, driving between Julian and Amanda's, we were taking care of our granddaughters, we go home, and this guy, delivery guy, parks in the middle of the road, doesn't put on his flashers, and jumps out and delivers a package there. And there were two empty spaces immediately to his right. But he stopped in the middle of the road and jumped out to deliver, and it was dark and no flashers and so forth. And it's like, what is the deal? Do you think you own the entire road? And why don't you even look to your left or your right? And that, of course, makes me think of an accident I saw in Benin a number of years ago, where I was walking down this street this way, and I was passed by a little motorcycle, one 50cc thing. And the other one I saw was coming this way and was going to be crossing at the intersection. And I thought, these two guys are going to run smack into each other. And what happened? They did. And the next day, or a couple days later, this was just a block below, away from our house, I was going out, and there was a Mercedes-Benz that zipped past me, and there was a lady crossing the street, but she was on the Meridian, and she stepped out into the traffic and was hit, not gravely injured, but she was hit by that Mercedes. Now, the Mercedes driver could have easily avoided hitting her, and she could easily have not stepped into the street, but neither of them was looking. And so part of the point, the connection between what's to come in terms of this sermon, is we have to be circumspect. We have to be alert to the context around us. Just because we have a calling and a ministry that's fixed in our minds and a direction that is uniquely ours doesn't mean we don't need to be awake. We need to be awake and alert to how all of those people are interacting around us in order to make informed choices and move in the right direction. So that's sort of one of the points at the end of this sermon. Now, the first story is one that I love, and I may have used it as an illustration another time, but it's this story of Samson. And what's unique about Samson is you get this here it's a time where the Philistines have occupied Israel for 40 years, and it's punishment from God, and now God is going to liberate Israel. And God chooses this obscure family from an obscure village and says, you barren woman, you're going to bear a child. And this child is going to begin the liberation of Israel from the Philistines. You find that in verse 5. And so here this angel visits this barren woman and says she's going to conceive and bear a child who will liberate. And she goes home and she tells her husband. What does her husband do? He panics. Do you know the story? It's right there if you want to go home and read it for yourself. Manoah, he says, oh, Dadgum, we're not prepared for a child, especially not a special child, you know? We are not prepared. Go and find whoever that messenger was and ask them to come back and tell us how to raise this child. Panic, right? So even though this angel has visited, this angel has shared what God's vision is for this couple, for this family, for their child, they're in a panic because they're not ready to be used by God. Now contrast that with the other story we read about Mary. What happens in the story with Mary? An angel comes and visits. What does the angel say? Jackie, do you remember? You're blessed. And how are you blessed? And what's the child going to do? It's not really in the passage fully, but yes, to be salvation or restoration is part of the picture. And what's Mary's response? Fear and trembling, but what else? Does she run and tell somebody? No. What does she say? Yeah, that's what the angel says. But Mary takes it and she questions it in a certain sense, but she accepts it and says, if this is the case, do it. She feels secure enough in her own identity. She doesn't say, hold it, I gotta go clear this with my prospective husband. You know, she feels like an autonomous person, you know. But then I've said this before, I know. She goes, the angel says, your aunt Elizabeth is also pregnant. And that's the one bit of verifiable information that Mary is given. And so what does Mary do? She rushes to her, and that's where she receives the confirmation. So both women seek confirmation, in a sense, but they do it quite differently. And particularly, Manoah is the faithless one. You know, we don't get much of a picture with in the Luke story. We get some doubt from Zechariah, but in we don't really hear from Joseph in Luke. So anyway, there are two birth narratives, birth stories, that both include an angel visit. Both. There's no preamble in the Jesus story that says that Israel has chosen evil and so forth, but that's one element that's a part of the occupation story of the Philistines, and that's part of the narrative. So there are these two parallel narratives, in a sense, that share a lot of similarities, because in both cases, Israel is an occupied territory. So it was occupied at the time of Jesus. It was occupied at the time of Samson. Now, goes on, there's the birth. We skipped over a lot of the story in both cases, Jesus' story and in Samson's story. But in Samson's story, just a few pages later, the basic line of the story is that, you know, Samson, can you remember his story? Can we recap it a little bit quickly? What are some of it? Is Samson a model of faithfulness? Why do you say it so categorically? Well, is he in the end? Why would you say that? Okay, he believed God would, but what did he ask God for? Revenge. For what? So even though Samson was chosen before his birth to move for the deliverance of Israel from the Philistines, even at the moment where, as Jackie said, he's fulfilling this calling upon his life, he doesn't do it out of faithfulness to God and God's purposes. He does it to enact revenge for the loss of his sight. So throughout this story of Samson, he demonstrates no understanding of a divine purpose in his life. I don't even understand why he's considered a judge, because he never plays that role. He never really plays that role. And the thing that disturbs me is that more than once I have in commentaries and so forth seen references to Samson as a type for Jesus, a type for Christ. What does type mean in this sense? Yeah, that's kind of what it's saying. And it also parallels with Jesus and the birth narrative, right? So there's the birth narrative and God's special designation. And then there's this second thing that's talking about that he died. But he didn't really die, did he? Samson. He committed suicide. He knew, and he intentionally acted in a way to bring about his own death. So here's an example where suicide is in a sense not even talked about. You know, it's kind of funny to me, because it's embracing, in a sense, it's saying it embraces God's purpose, so therefore, you know, we leave it alone. But anyway, how does this contrast with what we read about Jesus at the time of his death? How does Jesus understand his way to the cross? Does he run to the cross? Take this cup from me if it is your will. So Jesus, even though he doesn't run to the cross or from the cross, at the same time he says, you know, if we don't have to go this way, that would work just fine for me. And then later in Philippians, you know, Paul looks at it and he says in that Philippians 2, that hymn, you know, because Jesus accepted and laid down his life, therefore God raised him up. So it's because of this voluntary offering of himself that God raises Jesus up, according to that hymn. So we've seen these different parallels there. Both people were named beforehand, before their lives, before conception even. Jesus and Samson were both named to be deliverers of Israel. Both men ended up dying and fulfilling their call. But what's the difference between the two people? And how does that impact the way that we think about our own unique path? Yeah, okay, so there's a different outcome in the post-death. Anything else? Well, okay. But what about the way Samson lived? Not a righteous man. What are some of the examples of unrighteousness? He's a woman chaser. He's a big, strong guy, right? You know, he's got long hair. Probably reasonably good looking, you know. Gambler. Yeah. He's a killer. You know, he doesn't think anything of killing people. He uses his strength to defend himself. He uses his strength to confront others, destroy others. Anything else? He made a riddle. Yeah, he made a riddle. He made a riddle. You could say he lied, but what do you want to say about the riddle? Yeah, to trick his opponents and in a sense to protect himself, but it was also to test his wife, Delilah, you know? Well, there are two riddles, I would say, aren't there? Yeah, so there's the one about the lion, and then later there's one about, it's not really a riddle. It's what he tells his wife. He lies to her about where his strength comes from, and his strength comes from being faithful to his Nazarite lifestyle, and his head is not to be shaved or cut. Hair is not to be cut. So anyway, the thing that we see in the example of Jesus and in the example of Samson is one is a life of faithfulness to their calling. The other is a life of, how would you characterize it then? You know, he hasn't been a righteous person. He hasn't been what? But what in the end happens? Does God abandon the project? No. God uses Samson anyway. You know? So I want to take off from there, because I know just how unrighteous a man I am. I mean, I don't know the full measure of it, but I know it's big. And so I have a hard time. I'm always humbled by, you know, I've said this many times, by your acceptance of me, by being willing to walk with me for a time. And if we decide to continue, Mary Don's got the new contract for next year that's starting, you know. But the thing is, for me, I see this as a massive privilege. And it's certainly not a privilege that I've earned. It's something that, in a sense, God uses in spite of myself. And that's really, at the spiritual level, that's really where I stand. That being here, in many ways, is a very humbling experience, because I look at it and I say, you know, here, this is an opportunity, this is an occasion that God has given for me to share some of the things I have and to walk with you and to go where we don't know exactly. It's almost a, sort of an Abrahamic journey to land that I will show you, in a sense, because we don't know where we're going. But my conviction is that we have a unique opportunity, not just each of us as individuals, but as a congregation, we have unique opportunities and possibilities in this very context, not that they're based on the past, but they're based on this long road ahead of us. And so that's I think, point number one, is when I look at Samson, God used Samson in spite of his unrighteousness for God's purposes. And that's the reality for all of us. I can't shelve what I have to offer and be faithful to God's calling on my life. And you give me an opportunity to use some of that. Where is it going to go? I don't know. But I don't have to know. Why? Because God is working God's purposes out in and through us, even in this immediate context that we're in, politically and otherwise. There's so much uncertainty and so much tension in different places and so forth. But yet, God has put us in this place, in this time, in this very moment to do our part. And when we don't do our part, then that is opportunity disappears forever. So whether your vision is in education, in the arts, in teaching, training, in ecological restoration, and so on and so forth, there is a piece to that puzzle, that picture, that you are uniquely bring that to the table. And so our question isn't to be, we don't need to be distracted by all kinds of stuff behind around us. We need to pay attention to how we understand God's calling on each of us in the here and now. We have to pay attention to how God calls us to walk. And I think I'm going to diverge more and more, but I'm going to leave it at this, that it's not a mystery here. It's not a mystery here. I don't think God is calling Mackenzie to be anything other than what you are right now, in a certain sense. You are doing good work. You are doing it out of good motivation. You are doing it out of service to God. Same thing with Mike. I could go each row. I am confident that God is using each and every one of you in ways that we don't always understand. But what I do know and what I do strongly believe is that there are things that are uniquely you to contribute to the beauty of this bouquet. You know? And we are a diverse bouquet that's offered for God's kingdom. And we know that what God's kingdom is about is justice, righteousness, shalom, for all people to be gathered around the throne of God. So when we are walking and moving in that direction, we know that we are in God's will. And we also know that in spite of ourselves, God will use us. So I'll leave it at that.